Take your Bibles, if you would, tonight, Joshua chapter 23. We have two more chapters in the book of Joshua to finish up, and hopefully we'll finish up next week. But the last two chapters record similar events where Joshua calls the people, the people and the leaders of the people together. He knows he's in his last days, and so he addresses the leaders. And what he's trying to do in both addresses, both sermons, so to speak, or talks, whatever you want to call them, he's trying to protect the future of Israel. He's trying to encourage them to stay true to God. He reminds them of how good God has been to them in the past, and he warns them that there are consequences, severe consequences, if they turn from the God that they followed, you know, out of Egypt through the wilderness into the Promised Land, all through all the battles that they fought. They've stayed true to him, and he warns them. He says, don't turn from God. Don't get mixed up with the gods that are left in the land of Canaan. Now, let me just look ahead and read one verse to you from chapter 24, which we'll cover next week. It's verse 31. And Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders that overlived Joshua, and which had known all the works of the Lord that he had done for Israel. And so at least it made it to one generation. It made it to those, you remember Joshua and Caleb were the oldest two after everybody else over 20 died. But those that came out of, or that were under 20, the first time they came to the Promised Land and disobeyed God and turned around, those that were under 20 and those that were born in the wilderness, that 40 years that they were in the wilderness, sort of the next generation after Joshua, according to this verse, they stayed true to God. But as we begin to read in the book of Judges, the next generation did not. And we get into the book of Judges and we see the repeated cycle of the people of God turning away from him, God having to send punishment, and then the people turning back to him, serving him for a while, and then repeating that cycle over and over and over. And I was thinking about it just as a way to introduce our Bible study tonight. That's why we should not be satisfied to live on the blessings of the past. I mean, it's wonderful to be able to look in the rearview mirror and to point out and to count our blessings and see what God has done in the past. But our children and our grandchildren cannot live on our blessings in the past. It's wonderful for us to rehearse them before our kids and our grandkids. It's wonderful for them to hear from us how God has blessed. But they need to see the power of God working today. They need to see the blessings of God today. And those blessings only come as we remain obedient to God. And again, this verse 31 reminds us that they need to see how God blesses in answer to our obedience so that they will remain faithful to God as well. So we're going to look at verse 23 tonight, and we're going to see this group of leaders that gathered together and Joshua, what he tells them. So we start in verse 1, and it came to pass a long time after that the Lord had given rest unto Israel from all their enemies round about, that Joshua waxed old and stricken in age. And Joshua called for all Israel, and for their elders, and for their heads, and for their judges, and for their officers, and said unto them, I am old and stricken in age. So here he's gathered these leaders together. Now, it doesn't tell us where. There's some folks that think Joshua was so old, and he was probably in the last year of his life, and he lived to be 110. Some people think he was so old that he called everybody to his hometown. But not one time in the Bible do we find that Joshua ever inconvenienced anybody else for his own sake. He was always a serving leader. And so I think he went to Shiloh, where the tabernacle was. I think it was probably one of during the three feasts that the nation of Israel celebrated by coming, all the males, the men, coming together for those three feasts. And it was at one of those feasts that he gathered these guys together. And it doesn't tell us exactly when. It just says a long time after the Lord had given rest unto Israel. Long enough for the people to enjoy the land of Canaan a while. Long enough for them to see how blessed they were of God by him giving them orchards that they didn't plant and living in cities they didn't build. But also long enough for Joshua to see the danger that existed for God's people. Long enough that he could see what he needed to warn them about was coming. And again, in verse 2, it mentions the elders, the older people, the older leaders in the tribe, sort of the counselors of the tribe, and their heads, the heads of the tribe, the men that led the tribes, their judges, the ones that knew the law and decided on cases brought before the law, and their officers, those that were to carry out the judges' judgment, so to speak. Those were the leaders that Joshua called together. He called them together for a couple reasons, I think. First of all, to give them this warning. He says, you know, we've been in the land of Israel, in the land of Canaan, we've enjoyed it. And the land of Canaan, by the way, became the land of Israel, so sorry for that slip. But we've enjoyed it, but I see something happening that I want to warn you about. And he was hoping that he could get to the leaders to carry this message back to their people. He was hoping that they would listen and carry the message back. He was also hoping that they'd pay attention to the warning themselves. And by their example, be an influence on the other people. And so they were there. They heard this warning. And Joshua starts out by saying, I am old and stricken in years. Now remember, 10 chapters before, in chapter 13, it was God that said to Joshua, you're old and stricken in years. Here we are 10 chapters later. Joshua doesn't need God to remind him. You know, there comes a point in our life, you know, where, I mean, earlier in our life, we have other people telling us that we're old. I'm not going to mention any names. But we reach a point in our life where we realize it for ourselves that we're old and stricken in years. And I think he did that, again, for a couple reasons. He did that as an argument to himself. He was talking to himself and he's saying, Joshua, you're old and stricken in years. You don't have much longer to live. You need to get busy doing what God's told you to do. And I think God gave him this message, this warning that he had for his people. And so he was arguing, he was saying to himself, hey, you don't know how much longer you're going to have. You better get at doing what God told you to do. But he also, I think, used it as an argument with the people that says, hey, I am old and stricken in years. I am experienced. I have been your leader, for the past 7 or 8 years. God has used us together to take the land. I think I deserve your hearing. I think you need to listen to what I'm going to cover as I warn you of the danger that I see. And so in verse 3, he starts his message. And again, like any good preacher, he has a good introduction to get their attention, to get them to agree with something at the beginning of the message so they'll say, hey, this guy knows what he's talking about. I need to listen. And so he starts in verse 3, and ye have seen all that the Lord your God hath done unto all these nations because of you, for the Lord your God is he that hath fought for you. He was reminding them how great things God had done for them. He says, you've seen it. It hasn't been me. It hasn't been you. It's been God. God has done it. He led you. He fed you. He kept you. And then when he brought you into the land of Canaan, he fought for you. He's the one that has done it. In verse 4, behold, I have divided unto you by lot these nations that remain to be an inheritance for your tribes, from Jordan with all the nations that I have cut off, even unto the great sea westward. He says, we've taken the land. We possess it. It was God that gave us that land. And I'll skip down to verse 9 for a minute. For the Lord hath driven out from before you great nations and strong, But as for you, no man hath been able to stand before you unto this day. Now, again, the people that lived in the land of Canaan, they were God's creation too. I mean, they were a people made by God. God could have remade that people into his people. But he chose not to. He drove those people out of their lands, out of their cities, out of their homes, to give the land of Canaan to the nation of Israel. Not because they were better, not because they were bigger, not because they were brighter, but because God loved them. He showed grace to them, giving them something that they did not deserve. And he said in verse 9, none of them were able to stand before you. I mean, other than Ai, it was victory after victory after victory. Did you ever stop and think, in the whole book of Joshua, the only place that we read about the Israeli army losing a soldier was at Ai? That's the only place. No other place in the Bible, in the book of Joshua, do we read about an Israeli soldier getting killed. Now, again, it doesn't say. I don't think there were many wounded either. I think they fought battle after battle, and against some pretty strong armies, and they were victorious in every battle because the battle wasn't theirs, it was the Lord's. And he fought for them. Go back to verse 5. And the Lord your God, he shall expel them from before you and drive them out of your sight, and ye shall possess their land as the Lord your God hath promised unto you. Not only has he done good things for you in the past, he's not done yet, because there's still some Canaanites left, and he's going to drive them out from before you too. Now some of the Israelites might say, oh, listen, Joshua, you've disbanded the army. Everybody's gone back to their own possession, to their own tribe. To get the army back together, it's going to be hard. I mean, they're not going to want to come back together after you've dispersed them. And Joshua says, it doesn't matter, because it wasn't the army, it was me in the first place. Look down at verse 10. One man of you shall chase 1,000, for the Lord your God, he it is that fighteth for you, as he hath promised you. One shall chase 1,000. We don't need to call the army back together. I'm the one that's, Joshua says, God's the one that's fighting. And not only has he blessed you in the past, he's going to continue to do it. Because he's going to drive, if you'll do what you're supposed to do, he'll drive the rest of the Canaanites out of the land. Verse 10. Verse 6. Go back to verse 6. Be ye therefore very courageous to keep and to do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, that ye turn not aside therefrom to the right hand or to the left. Now, because God has blessed you in the past, and he's given you this land, because he's going to continue to bless you and drive out the rest of the Canaanites, you need to be very courageous. It's God's fight. He's going to fight for you, but you need to be obedient. You need to be obedient to everything that's in the law of Moses. You need to be obedient to everything that's in there. Don't turn to the right. Don't turn to the left. Stay on the straight path. Don't waver. Don't get off course. He says, this is why I wanted to talk to you. This is what I'm warning you about. This is the danger that I see. Verse 7, that ye come not among these nations, these that remain among you, neither make mention of the name of their gods, nor cause to swear by them, neither serve them, nor bow yourselves unto them. The Canaanites that are left, you've got to be very careful. And again, Joshua is saying, here's the danger I see as I look, as we've enjoyed the land of Canaan and the blessings that God has given us. Here's the danger that I see, that we're going to get mixed up with the Canaanites. And Joshua is very specific as what he tells them to do. He says, don't come among them. Don't go where they are. Don't get familiar with them. Just stay away from them. Don't mention their name. Let their name be blotted out. Let it be forgotten. As I was studying, I read where the Jewish parents would not let their children mention swine because they didn't even want them to know that it existed. And if they did mention it, they had to call it a dirty thing and a cursed thing. And Joshua was telling the people, God's man, that's the same thing to do about the idols, the false gods that are in the land of Canaan. Don't even mention their name. Don't even put them into your mind. I don't want you to go where they are. I don't want you to put them into your mind. I don't want you to cause any to swear by them. Hey, if you do a business deal with somebody in the Canaanites, don't make them swear by their God that they're going to keep the deal. Because when you're doing that, you're giving credence to the fact that their God exists. Don't do that. And he certainly says the last thing. He said, don't bow down and worship them. He knew that if they wouldn't do the first three things, very likely they wouldn't do the last thing. If they didn't get close to them, if they didn't mention or learn their name, if they didn't give, you know, let somebody else in their presence and acknowledge that that was their God, they probably wouldn't bow down and worship them either. Now, I don't know about you, but I think that's a pretty good prescription for how we can stay out of sin today. Don't go around it. Don't get familiar with it. Don't mention it by name. Don't acknowledge somebody else that's in that sin, and then we won't get involved with it. Pretty good prescription. It reminds me of what the psalmist says in Psalm chapter 1, where he says, blessed is a man, and again, the progression into sin, blessed is a man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. If you don't walk with the ungodly, you won't stand with sinners, and then you won't sit with the scornful. Okay? And it just shows the progression of sin. All right, look at verse 8. But cleave unto the Lord your God as ye have done unto this day. The best defense is a good offense. Stay close to God. Hang on to Him. Delight in Him. The closer you are to God, the harder it is to start worshiping idols. So he says in verse 11, take good heed, therefore, unto yourself that ye love the Lord your God. What he's saying is, be diligent. Be always on guard. Not because you have to, not because you're a slave, but because you love God so much. Take heed. Else, if ye do in any wise go back, verse 12, and cleave unto the remnant of these nations, even these that remain among you, and shall make marriages with them, and go into them, and they to you. What Joshua was saying is, look, just stay away from them. Stay close to God. Hang on to Him. Love Him. Otherwise, here's the danger, you're going to get mixed up with these people. And you're going to get mixed up with their gods. And I was thinking, you know, Solomon's not on the scene yet. The wisest man that ever lived, Solomon. And yet when he intermarried with heathen, they drug him away from God to worship idols. And to set up spots, even in Jerusalem, for their idols to be set up. And Joshua says, I can see it coming. I mean, we're enjoying the blessings of God in this place that He's given us, and He's left this people here as a test to see if we're going to stay true to Him. I'm warning you, don't go near them. Don't mention their names. Don't associate with people that do. Don't let your kids date them. Don't intermarry with them, because if you do, you're going to turn away from God. He says in verse 14, I'm sorry, verse 13. Know for a certainty that the Lord your God will no more drive out any of these nations from before you. But they shall be snares and traps unto you, and scourges in your side, and thorns in your eyes, until ye perish from off this good land which the Lord your God hath given you. He says, there's going to be consequences. If you get involved with these people and you worship their gods, God is, he's not going to be able to do what he's promised to do. He's not going to be able to drive them out. And the people that are left, they're going to be bad for you. I mean, just look at the way he describes it. The snares and traps, scourges in your side, thorns in your eyes. If you turn away from God, the people that are left are not going to be driven out. They're going to be there to torment you. He says in verse 14, "And behold, this day I am going the way of all the earth. And you know in your hearts, then in all your souls, that not one thing hath failed of all the good things which the Lord your God spake concerning you. All are come to pass unto you, and not one thing hath failed thereof." Joshua said, look, I'm old. I'm stricken in years. I'm going to die. I'm not going to be here to be your leader anymore. But I want to tell you something. God will never leave you. God's always going to be here. And you know that he keeps every promise that he makes. Not one of them has been broken. Not one thing that he's promised has failed to happen. You know that. Verse 15, "Therefore it shall come to pass that as all good things are come upon you, which the Lord your God promised you, so shall the Lord bring upon you all evil things until he hath destroyed you from off this good land which the Lord your God hath given you." Here's what Joshua is saying. Look, folks, look, God keeps every one of his promise. And he has. He has as he's brought us into this land. I mean, this was a land promised to our ancestors, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And he's given it to us. And it was easy. It was easy to take because God fought for us. I mean, we lost. Again, I think the only people they lost was at Ai. And again, that was because of their disobedience. And God has kept every promise. Now listen, listen, listen. This is a warning. I want to wave my hands and stomp my feet. I can't wave them very high. I can't stomp them very hard because I'm old. But I want to warn you, if you turn away from God, he's going to keep the promise of punishment. He's going to keep the promise of punishment. You see, most of us like to raise our hands and praise God and say, yep, he keeps every promise for all the good things. But we forget that he also promises to chasten his children that sin. That's just a promise. Just like, you know, he'll supply all our needs. Just like he'll answer our prayer. He will also punish sin. And sometimes I was talking to my barber today about this. Sometimes God doesn't mete out his punishment immediately. Sometimes God is very patient as he punishes a people. And I think that's because of his goodness, because of his mercy. He's trying to give his people a chance to repent, to turn back from their sin. And sometimes we think we're getting away with something. Remember when you were a little kid, maybe you didn't do this, but I just, when I did something wrong and I didn't get punished right away, I always thought, well, you know, my dad didn't notice I'm getting away with something. Well, you know how you think your parents have eyes in the back of your head? It's like Aaron was quoting that verse, the eyes of your parents are everywhere, and they see. And I may have gotten it, may not have gotten it, right after the act, but I got it. I got it. God is the same way. He may be merciful and he may be long-suffering, but just like he's kept all the promises for good, if we turn away from him like his people did, he will keep the promise for chastisement as well. Verse 16, "When ye have transgressed the covenant of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, and have gone and served other gods, and bowed yourselves to them, then shall the anger of the Lord be kindled against you, and ye shall perish quickly from off the good land which he hath given unto you." Joshua was reminded, you made a covenant with God. You made an agreement with God. He was going to be your God. You were going to be his people. And if you turn away from him, you are breaking that covenant. You are breaking that agreement. And God will mete out his punishment. And so again, here's an old man. He knows he's about to die. He's gathering the people together. He'll do it again in chapter 24 and deliver the same message. He says, stay true. Stay faithful. Don't turn away. God's, you know, I'm going away. I'm dying. I'll be dead pretty soon. I won't be here. But God's going to be here forever. He'll never leave you, never forsake you. And he will continue to bless and he will continue to promise as long as you are obedient to him. This message is timeless. This message is just as apropos today to us as it was when Joshua gave it to his people. God has been good to us in the past. He will continue to be good to us in the future, but he expects and demands our obedience to neither turn to the right or to the left from his word. I thought about that verse in the book of Psalms. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. And as a nation turns from God, God will punish. He will. Glad you're here tonight. Let's stand. We'll have a word of prayer. And be dismissed.